Expert Interview from Mind Tools.
Welcome to this edition of Expert Interview from Mind Tools with me, Rachel Salomon. Most companies rely on people to generate revenue, and people are complicated animals, probably more complicated than most of us like to admit. We all have certain personality traits that help and sometimes hinder us at work. If we took more notice of people's personalities, could we build more effective teams and become more productive? My guest today is Dana Barocca, CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services and the co-author of a new book called Cracking the Personality Code. We're going to be looking at how managers can get the right people in the right positions and how understanding the difference between personalities can help create a happier, more successful workplace. Dana joins me on the line from California. Hello, Dana.
Thank you so much for having me on your show today.
You're very welcome. Thanks for joining us. At the beginning of your book, you make the point that around half of all new hires fail to meet expectations. And you suggest this is because not enough attention is paid to finding out the true personality of the candidates. What do hiring managers tend to get wrong?
I think there's two specific things. First of all, hiring managers, for the most part, don't have a clear definition of actually who they want in the seat. And if they had a clear definition of the kind of characteristics they would like or goals and objectives they would like to have accomplished, really clear goals and objectives, not just I want them to show up in the morning, I want them to make X number of phone calls, something more specific than that, that tends to help. And the second thing is, a lot of hiring managers are looking for someone to walk in the front door, present themselves in a certain way. They basically have to fog the mirror, in a sense, and be alive because they need somebody really badly to fill the position. And that leads to really not probing enough with the individual to find out who they are, what they have to offer. They're not probing as far as asking for real detailed examples or possibly not even giving homework to an individual to see how they might respond to a task or activity. It's really helpful to have candidates towards the end of the interview process, so maybe the second or third meeting, to draw a pie chart, a couple of pie charts, as to what their last position looked like as far as how time was carved out in a typical month, and then also for this particular position, the new position, how they perceive time being drawn out in a typical month once they settle down in the position. So an example would be, let's say a company is hiring a sales manager, and in their old position, they put down 40% of their time was spent on administrative activity. And the new position is requiring only 15 or 20%. And the person goes, wow, I really enjoyed the 40% of time spent on that. It was just a lot of fun. Well, there's probably that's a good area to probe into a little further to see why they have a need for that or why they enjoy that. They might be unhappy campers if they're only doing 15 or 20% of their time in that area.
In your book, you talk quite a lot about the value of personality tests when hiring managers are choosing candidates. What kinds of personality tests are useful in the hiring process?
There are thousands of different assessments around the world, and it gets very confusing because everyone's pitching their wares what assessments to use. I think the main criteria is to make sure a profile has a minimum of 165 questions or more within it in order to gain enough data on the individual. Otherwise, it's kind of like pixels on a screen. More questions, the more data points that are being picked up, and if a questionnaire only has 30 or 50 or 60 questions in it, it's very limited data. So it's kind of like, again, pixels on a screen. You might look at limited pixels and go, oh, that's a pretty picture. But then when you have better resolution, you go, oh, wow, I didn't see that before. Hiring, you want to make sure you have as much data as possible. The second thing is you also want to have to make sure that whoever is doing the interpretation of the data is properly degreed or trained in interpreting the information. The third thing is want to make sure that whoever is doing the testing has the job description, has a copy of the resume of the candidate, So when reviewing the data with the organization, they have all that information in front of them for another set of eyes for debriefing. Because a personality assessment, to use appropriately, to me is part of the three-legged stool of hiring. The first leg is the best interviewing anyone can possibly do, through peeling the onion back, let's say. The second leg is doing the best reference and background checking anyone can do. And the third leg is using an in-depth work-style personality assessment. And they should all validate each other. And that's why I think it's so important to use an assessment, because then you'll be able to see, oh, yeah, I saw that during the interview, or I missed that, so then I better go back and re-examine a little bit to see what's going on there.
What kind of things can personality tests tell you about a candidate?
It can look at the problem-solving capacity of an individual, which is really helpful because problem-solving is a big part of being in a position, and also learning how to onboard someone. So if someone is more rote in their learning style or how they problem-solve, that's helpful to know that. If someone's able to think out of the box and they have a strong intellect, let's say, to figure things out, maybe just give them a book and they're able to figure it out. Sometimes people will also spin in their mind so much when they're problem-solving, they don't move forward or get something done. Or some individuals have major self-esteem issues, so they're very scared to make a decision. And if someone's being put in a position where they have to make quick decisions, yet they're scared to make them, best to know that up front. Understanding stress to see how someone deals with a stressful situation. Are they going to be reactive or how they're going to deal with it? It depends on the profile that's used, the number of questions that are asked, and how well validated the profile is, and making sure it has cultural bias built into it for sufficient countries around the world. If a profile claims to have a translation and it doesn't have the cultural bias built into it from research, that doesn't do a lot of good.
And when should these types of tests be done, before or after an interview? At what point in the process?
I think it should be done around the second or third interview, just before the final face-to-face interview, and pre-reference background checking. The reason you want to have it before the final face-to-face interview is then it will catch other things you might have missed. Now, there's an exclusion there. If there's one or two in-depth phone interviews with someone because they're being flown across the country or around the world, I would recommend doing the assessment before paying for the airplane ticket or transportation somewhere, because that would give additional information to probe into further before making the investment.
Now, whenever I've been required to do a psychometric test or a personality test, I've always found it a bit unsatisfactory because either none of the answers matched my personality or more than one did when I was only allowed to actually pick one. How much can a test really make an accurate assessment of one's personality?
Well, it's difficult for the test taker. If the test taker is trying to figure out the logic of the profile, if it's a simplistic profile, maybe with 30 questions or 60 questions, they can probably figure it out somehow or another. When it gets above 164 questions, the questions that are reworded actually have nothing to do with each other, but there's validation points set up throughout the profile. In decent profiles, it's a moving target based on data, the research data that's always being updated within the database. And so I would suggest not try to figure it out, but just answer the best you can in the moment and let it go, because if it's a good profile, they're very reliable instruments as long as they have the studies behind them and they've been around long enough. Now, an in-depth personality assessment is clinically valid for 90 days plus or minus, because we're all subject to change. What we've seen is most people stay fairly close for a much longer period of time. But as human beings, we are pliable and are subject to change, which is a very cool thing about human beings.
Now, this kind of test produces data, scientific data. But what about the fact that people's moods change and a person might answer a question one way on one day, truthfully, but feel completely different on another day, truthfully? Are these tests able to take that mercurial quality of human nature into account, given that they're scientific instruments?
An in-depth personality assessment, a work-style assessment, will go underneath the surface of the daily activity. If, let's say, someone's having a bad hair day with that example, it will go underneath that and look at core wiring, which sounds very dramatic. But it actually will. It will an in-depth profile will look at the core wiring to see where someone's coming from and how they'll react on a mean average of things or days. Now, if someone has just gone through some dramatic situation, a death in the family, or maybe it's just been in a major car accident or something like that, that would then affect the core. That would go right to the core. But most people don't come to an interview with those particular issues. That's why it's important to have sufficient number of questions within a profile to get that kind of data. Otherwise, it is just surfacey, and it will a questionnaire with 30 or 60 questions like that, it could be affected by the daily moods, let's say.
So again, it comes down to the quality of the test that you're
Correct.
Using.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about this phenomenon that you mentioned in your book, impression management, when a candidate tries to fake good results, answering what they think the prospective employer wants to see rather than what they know to be true? What can a hiring manager do about that, if anything?
It's an interesting phenomena. An in-depth assessment will have a scale called impression management and faking good in it. And it's not so much that the person is trying to lie or fudge about themselves. They're revealing some inner insecurity about themselves that they're counterbalancing to the rest of the world, that they want everyone to see that they're okay. So an example of that. Let's say someone triggers off a low impression management. Let's say a 2, 3, 4, 5. That's kind of like a litigation attorney. They just don't care what people think of them, let's say. On the higher end of the scale, when we get above a 22, the person is trying to show that they have their act together more than they truly do, but they want the rest of the world to see that side. So let's say an example in the workplace where that might manifest itself is if something goes wrong, they might beat themselves up, or they could end up blaming others because they don't want to see their flaw within themselves. So they're always trying to play themselves off as okay, or you didn't tell me that, you didn't explain that to me, so-and-so didn't do their job, and it's difficult for them to take responsibility for it. So that's a really important scale to have within a profile. If a profile doesn't have impression manager faking good built into it, I would recommend not using that profile for new hires, but it may be acceptable for doing team building or something like that. New hires need to have that in there.
So how seriously should managers take the results of these tests, assuming they do the things that you suggest and do the right type of tests?
They should pay very close attention. It shouldn't be a reason not to hire someone. It will be a reason to probe further if the profile is showing some warning signs or red flags or something like that. Those are areas to probe into then to validate through additional interviewing or reference background checking to see what those things are. But I would definitely pay attention to them because there's a reason things pop up. A person is revealing something about themselves they're not necessarily either aware of, or they're not open or sharing it during the interview process. So I would say if flags start to show up in their, let's say, the strong yellow or red flag area, it's a sign of caution and needs to be validated.
You're listening to Expert Interview from MindTools.
So how can personality tests and instruments like that be usefully used outside the hiring process, in the everyday job of managing?
It can be used as a wonderful management tool to understand how people tick and how to get the best out of the relationship. I think management from here on out is not going to be the dictatorial, autocratic methodology that's been used in the past, but rather understanding the best that anybody can of how that person works, how they think, how to get the best out of them, to put them into the right position so they can take their skills and their talents and utilize them in the best position possible. And so I think using an assessment to understand your team can really help to increase not only productivity but job satisfaction, loyalty, and can act as a public relations tool because if people are happy in their position, they're going to tell their friends and they're going to attract new people into the organization, top talent, that is.
So would you actually recommend sitting people down and making them do tests like this?
Well, my experience is that it's a very helpful process for the individual to get some feedback on themselves, not to be used as a tool of, I told you so, you don't know what you're doing, but rather as a tool to help someone grow, come up with a mentoring program to help them, and to assist the team on putting people in the right place to get the best out of them and not putting them in positions where they're going to fail.
So what else can managers do apart from put their team through these tests to try to understand the personalities of their team?
I think to get to know the people also, to ask questions, care about the individuals, respect them. And so if an individual has a family that plays soccer or some sport, or they like to go camping, or they're doing something all together, or just some human interest thing, or they like music, know that. Ask questions about it. Bring clippings from a newspaper or magazine in or something off the internet and share it with them to show that you are really caring about them or and are interested.
And what about if managers want to understand their own personality better? What should they do?
I think taking an assessment can be very helpful, and they should be the first ones to take it to get feedback before they have others do it. Because they say, oh, I had this great experience. Let me share with you my profile. And then talk about that and then get everybody acclimated into it. There's also a book I would recommend, other than our book, of course. It's called Play to Win. The author's name is Larry Wilson. It's one of the best books globally for managers to read on how to help to make situations win-win, not only for themselves but also for their teams, and helping to understand where people are coming from and working with people in a proactive way.
What was the title again?
It's called Play to Win by Larry Wilson.
Okay, great. So that's a good one. And there's another book that you reference in your book called Dealing with Difficult People by Rick Brinkman and Rick Kirshner. You reference quite a lot of their ideas in Cracking the Personality Code. Let's take a look at a couple of these now, starting with the personality that they call the authority. What kind of person is this, and how do you deal with them?
They're such wonderful individuals, by the way, the authors. They've let us take some of their information and summarize it in our book, so it's a nice handbook to have on your desk, open it up. So let's say someone's working with someone like the authority, as they say, the I know it all. So that's an individual that has low tolerance for correction or blames others because they know it all. And so a couple of ways to handle that type of individual is to do some active listening. So, you know, what I hear you saying, Susie or Joe, is, and be very interested in what they're saying. Be very respectful of what they're saying, because they know it all. You want to use very soft words like we and us and, oh, I was wondering what do you suppose would happen if we tried this? That goes back to their wonderful knowledge base. And they'll spend then more time teaching the individual on what they know and help them to be successful versus challenging them. Challenge them, they're going to then push back on it.
And what about the whiner, people who think they're being given a hard time by everyone and everything? What's the best way to handle whiners?
Isn't that an interesting one? It's like the oh, woe is me syndrome. The world is so unfair, and they're just constantly complaining. So let me give some do's and don'ts. Don't agree with them. That just encourages them to continue to complain. Don't disagree with them, as they'll feel the need to repeat their woes. Don't try to solve their problems because you can't. Do have patience with their unrealistic standards and their endless negativity, let's say. Do have compassion for them, as their lives just seem to be beyond their control. And do have commitment to the process for getting them to be focused on a solution. So one way to do that is you can listen and write down the main points of their complaints. So let's say you're a manager. Oh, let's write it down. So it helps to take responsibility for it, or even you can even have them write it down, but usually the manager writes down. So what I hear you saying is da 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 da. No, I didn't mean that. Well, what do you mean then? Let's get specific here. Well, I don't think this will ever get solved. Well, let's pretend that we were going to solve it. You don't want to interrupt them. Just let them go on a little bit. And try to get them to be as focused as possible. You know, if we were able to do that, what would you want to get out of this? and have them just explain more of what they would like to get out of this unrealistic thing that they think, and base everything on the facts and information, and get them to feedback on that alone, and keep repeating it over and over again.
At what point should you think about removing them from your team, any of these difficult personalities?
If it becomes chronic, it's just a constant issue, and it's draining away from the team. I think in our environment that's going to continue globally, none of us can afford to have people continue to do that. There has to be solutions. There has to be contribution. There has to be a talent and a willingness to solve problems. Now, the manager, there may be a great deal of fear, and the manager's job is to help the individuals think out of the box and to overcome those fears and help them to get into an idea mode. Everything needs to be overcome. And if the person gets too bogged down with, they're just always a complainer or something, there's a benefit to a complainer because they will identify issues that may be overlooked by people that always have that positive side, so they do have their place. But if they're taking so much time and draining, here's a great exercise for the listeners. If you take a blank piece of paper and draw in the middle of it a little circle, and that would be me, M-E, meaning yourself. Around the outside, draw little circles and put initials in it of people that are reporting to you or different departments. Be done either way for both. And then connect the dots. So from yourself going out to those individuals or to the departments, let's say there's a great relationship, draw a straight line. If it's kind of a little bit marginal relationship, a slightly wavy line, and if it's more than that, a little more wavy, and if it's a really tough relationship, put a jagged line to those individuals or to that department. And after doing that, you can write down a couple of characteristics, like three characteristics as to why the line is straight, what makes that up, and three characteristics for the jagged line individual. And then start identifying where those issues are. After that, identify how much time is being taken with the jagged line person, and then take the amount of time that's being spent and translate that into dollars as to how much money it's costing in time for you to deal with that particular individual or department. Then you can figure out, should I make an investment here of training or trying to resolve this, or is this worth it? And then replacing the individual or changing something in the department. And that's, I think, in circling back, is why it's so important to do the best onboarding or interviewing up front by doing the best interviewing, understanding how to hire and interview the best possible way, doing the best reference background checking, and also doing an in-depth work style personality assessment up front to make sure that individual is the right fit for the position, because no one wants to have an individual join that isn't going to be close to the right fit, because it's not a win-win for anybody, and it's going to be a very poor attractor for the future, because someone's going to be unhappy, they're going to leave and go, you shouldn't work for them. And it's the global population is shrinking, and the talent pool is actually shrinking. And it's going to continue to get worse over the next couple decades. So nobody can afford, really, to have a mishire. Not only will the work not get done efficiently, but also it's very poor for recruiting in the future, and we can't afford not to have great PR out there.
Dana Barocca, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me today.
You can find out more about Dana and his work at www.lighthouseconsulting.com. His book is called Cracking the Personality Code, co-authored by Ellen Barocca. It also has a website, www.crackingthepersonalitycode.com. I'll be back in a few weeks with another expert interview. Until then, goodbye.